Magic 109 breaking the radio dial. This is Wes's Musical Meltdown, and I am happy to introduce the first guest we've ever had on the Magic 109 version of the show. And though I've interviewed plenty of musicians in the past, this is my first author interview, so here's hoping it goes well. Joe, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the Magic audience, and let's take it from there.
My name is Joe Elizabeth Pinto, J.E. Pinto for this book.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think Joe Elizabeth went very well with a group of teenagers, all boys. So that's why I wrote it under that name.
And I could
look for the.
I would say I could see that, and definitely on Audible it shows as J.E., but when I was looking on Amazon, it actually did show Joe. I was kind of surprised by that.
Well, it showed as J.E. until I wrote another book under Joe Elizabeth, and then it got all confused.
Gotcha.
So that's why it turned out like that.
That makes sense. So I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, I've read Bright Side of Darkness, and I am working my way through Daddy Won't Let Mom Drive the Car. And I've got to tell you, as a blind parent, I'm really enjoying it so far as a blind father. And I believe we're being joined by Alicia. Bear with me as I hand her the headset. There you go. So I guess what I want to ask is, let's start with Bright Side. What inspired the writing of that book? Was it based on people from your own life, or how did you come up with it? It's a wonderful book, by the way.
Well, it's interesting because it started as a short story for a high school English class.
Mm.
And at that time, I just saw these characters sitting on this bench, at a baseball game, which mm-hmm. may have been kind of inspired by where I grew up, but it was, I grew up in a small town. It wasn't quite like the setting. So it was just in my imagination, but I wrote the story, got an A, and
nice.
Put it away. But I had fallen in love with these kids, and I had broken it off at a very sad point. And then it just sort of stayed in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I needed to learn how to use a computer. Now, this was back in the days before the internet, when it was just a word processor. And I needed a large chunk of text.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took that story out and typed it in, and it was pretty bad, actually. It was very amateur, and it was a mess. You know, you don't write well when you're 16. So I was surprised by the amateurishness of the writing, but I had something good there. The characters were vivid and
mm-hmm.
alive, and they had never really let go of me. And so I moved stuff around and deleted and edited and learned how to use the word processor.
Mm-hmm.
And the story got better, because that's what happens when you mess with it. And so I showed it to my husband at the time, and he said, "You can't leave those kids like that."
Right.
What happened to them? And so I thought, well, what if?
Mm.
And that's where the story began to grow. And so I then used experiences from my own life, because he and I had gotten through circumstances into some extreme poverty, and we couldn't have children at that time, he and I. And so I was kind of a aunt or a mentor or something to a lot of kids in our
yeah.
neighborhood. We were kind of the stable adults, because he was ill and I was blind, and so we weren't working, and we were around.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of adults weren't. They were either off being crazy or working double shifts somewhere trying to put food on the table.
Sure.
So we bought meals, and we did laundry for kids, and we helped with homework, and we put Band-Aids on skinned knees, and we talked to people about relationships, and we were kind of the go-tos.
So basically, you were kind of like Ed and Sharon, like the twins' parents, for those who have read them.
Yeah. So a lot of the book came from those years.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so I felt qualified to write a book like that because we saw a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of heartbreaking kind of stuff. I mean, I went to labor classes with young girls
mm-hmm.
who didn't have people to go with them and went to the school and tried to talk the school out of suspending kids for non-attendance because that
yeah.
just made the non-attendance worse.
Right.
And tried to find drug counseling for kids and just a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you were an advocate for them.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, Alicia has joined
Hello.
Us now.
Hi.
For the benefit of the listeners, my partner in crime, significant other, co-host extraordinaire, Alicia has joined the party. I've got to ask, I'm just curious, because the whole time I've known you, you've lived in Colorado, but of course this story takes place mostly in Texas. Did you grow up in Texas, or how did you pick that as the setting for your story?
I just kind of randomly chose it because I didn't want it to be Colorado. I didn't want it to be so close to home, but I didn't want it to be somewhere I didn't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, so it was North Texas, kind of close to Southern Colorado. So it mm-hmm. wasn't a completely different climate.
Right.
It wasn't completely out of my range. So I just, you know, I didn't want to pick Denver.
Right.
You kind of have to get somewhat out of your comfort zone, which is why I chose to narrate it from a young male person. So there's a blind character in there, but I didn't narrate mm-hmm. it from her because I didn't want to be, I wanted to completely get out of my own head.
Right.
Right.
I'm going to throw it over to Alicia.
I was just going to ask you, Joe, you were talking about how a lot of the experiences you wrote in the characters came from your own life and your own experience with kids and being their advocate. As far as the kids go, I know everyone in the book is fiction, but was there anyone in your life, any kids that you knew that kind of inspired the kids that you wrote in the book, the crew or Daisy?
They're all fiction. It's kind of just there's nobody that is written after anybody.
Gotcha.
But there's a lot of real experience in that book.
Right.
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
Now, I want to ask kind of, I guess, from a more technical perspective. Number one, if I remember right, the first book is self-published. For the most
yes.
part, right? How did you go about doing that? Did you run into any accessibility barriers? And also, how did you go about getting a service like Audible to pick it up? Because I know, having worked for NLS in the past, they won't work, you know, they unfortunately won't put a lot of self-published works into Braille or audio, but I imagine for a commercial publisher, it's a little different. So for those aspiring authors who think, I've got a great idea for a story, I'd like to get my story out there, publish it myself, and maybe even get it recorded for not just the blind, but a lot of sighted folks enjoy Audible in their cars or in their trucks. What advice would you give, and what was that process like for you?
Well, it's gotten a lot easier because when I first started down this road, I shopped the book to a lot of conferences and agents and different mm-hmm. places, and it got a lot of interest. There were people who really liked it, but it didn't fit into their little niches.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite young adult, and it wasn't quite inspirational, and it wasn't quite contemporary. It was all of those.
Right. Right.
So I had trouble finding a place for it. There were some agents that were interested, and there were a few places that looked at it, but they didn't bite because it wasn't exactly pigeonholable. That's mm-hmm. the word.
I love that word, by the way.
It's a new word. If it, it isn't now, it'll be in the Oxford Dictionary next year.
Exactly.
The new word of the year.
It didn't fit into any of their pre-programmed molds, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened was that it sat in a drawer for a long time. And then in 2014, my mom passed away from colon cancer in 10 days. She fell and broke her hip in the grocery store, and it just went really fast. And it was shocking. It was brutal.
I bet.
And I got the message, which was, we don't know how long we have to knock around this planet. And if we're going to do something, we better do it, because we just don't know. And some of us are more blessed with the fact we don't know than others.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I went to Amazon with the help of a friend of mine and figured out the ins and outs of self-publishing, which is not as accessible as it could be. I was really glad to help, you know, have the help of a sighted person.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it's free and it's easy, but it's not easy for a blind person to do.
Right,
which is what stops a lot of people.
Right, and I had the advantage of being a proofreader, because there's a lot of stuff out there that is published that really shouldn't be, or that should have been edited first.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, I had done a professional edit, so I had paid money, like $1,100 or so, to have another person go through it. Not only for proofreading, but for, does it flow? Mm-hmm. Does it have all the aspects? You know, does the, is the dialogue where it should be? Someone else who's an author, not just your friend saying, oh, this is great.
Right.
But, you know, someone else who knows what they're doing technically. And so I published it in 2015, and then access for the blind is important to me, and I had poked at NLS, but they didn't do self-published stuff very readily.
No.
So I went to Audible, and I spent more of my own money. That was about $1,100 also.
Oh, my.
To narrate. Now, I still haven't made all that back yet, but I'm working on it. You audition a narrator, and then they go through each chapter, and then they fix the errors. You have a chance to have them fix what you want them to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's all done, you can either do it where you split the royalties or you pay them up front. And then, and I just paid him up front because he was a kid working his way through acting school, which is why I got the price I got. Otherwise, it would have been more. And he did a great job.
Yeah, he did.
Absolutely.
Did great with the voices, and he nails all those characters down just how you think they'd sound too. Like if it were to be made into a movie or something.
Oh, he absolutely does.
Oh, he did a wonderful job. I'm really impressed with how well he did, especially considering that he's a young kid from Seattle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you kidding me?
No, he's, I mean, if you hear him, if you listen to the before stuff, at the beginning, he doesn't sound like that.
I honestly thought that was a different guy at the beginning.
No, it's the same guy.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, he nails that voice. It's funny, Joe, because when we're listening to that book, if we listen to it very long, it wasn't long before Wes is talking with a Southern accent. Like, literally, he picked up this guy's accent after a couple of, like, even an hour, let alone a couple hours of listening to the book. He spent couple hours speaking in a Southern accent.
I was kind of talking like a combination of Rick and Tim there.
Not quite like that, but
not quite that bad. But, it's great. It's a great book, too. I would recommend it to really anyone of all, you know, just about any age. I guess before we move on to talking about your other book and what's next for you and whatnot, I don't want to give away the ending, but where it ends, there are so many directions it could go. Have you thought about writing a sequel, or?
Oh, I've thought about it. I just haven't, raising a kid and having a job and
yeah,
makes it hard.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I get it.
We'll see.
So let's.
The other thing is the exciting part is now the book has gotten enough, I guess, recognition and enough readership that it's on Bookshare and it's going to come out on Bard.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Wonderful.
Because I will tell you, having, like I said, having worked for NLS for years, a lot of the local libraries will do self-published works, or as they call it, vanity press. But the national service itself does not do a lot of that. And I know the Colorado Library and the library in Washington and a couple of the others have great recording studios locally. And Bard has finally started accepting, you know, for our sighted listeners, Bard is basically, it's an audio and braille download service for the blind and visually impaired. Kind of like what you guys have with your OverDrive or your other ebook services through your public library. But anyway, they will finally take the local submissions and put them up on Bard. And that took a lot of lobbying on the part of local readers, advisors, and, you know.
Well, it's through Colorado, but it's not nationally even. It's through the
So Colorado's going to record it. But everybody in the country who has a Bard account will be able to access it finally, which is awesome.
Same with Bookshare.
Yep.
Anyone who has a Bookshare
account. It's on Bookshare, but it took some doing. It's been 5 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not been overnight.
The blind community tends to want it now. So I've been pestered and now that the first one got on, it may be easier for my second one to get up there, but it was not an easy thing to make happen.
No, I bet.
So, which is why I put it on Audible and spent money to do that, because I wanted people to have access. And now you can get it on your voiceover with your Kindle and Alexa and all that. You can hear it in a pretty decent voice. But at the time, Audible was the way to go.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with Audible, you can do it on your phone, on your computer, on your Alexa, on your Google Home, whatever. And it picks up right where you left off, which is nice when you change from device to device. There's no more skipping around. Where was I? So let's talk a little bit about your second book, Daddy Won't Let Mom Drive the Car. And as a father who's not allowed to drive the car for the same reasons, I sympathize with the title. But number one, how'd you come up with that title, and how, you know, obviously the stories come from the raising of your daughter. What made you decide to put this book together, and how long did this one take?
Well, the title came from something my daughter actually said to her second grade class when her teacher asked her what it was like to have a blind mom, and just off the cuff without even thinking about it, she said, "Well, it's like having a regular mom, except Daddy won't let her drive his car."
Nice.
So it's not really a novelty to her. It's not really a problem. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
Right.
It's her life.
That's really cool. I love it.
That book, I've been wanting to do it for a while because there was a woman, and we all know, I can't remember what her name was, but in Missouri some years ago, who had her baby taken, well, it was a couple, I think, that had their baby taken away.
Yes,
I remember that.
I do too.
For a couple of months.
Yep.
Yes.
And my baby was small at that time. And I prayed for her and cried with her every day. And I felt almost guilty because my baby was in my arms and her baby was not in her arms.
Right.
And I had gone through some stress of people doubting me while I was pregnant and wondering if I could raise a baby and the whole, I think a lot of parents do.
Yeah.
And so I had had it in my mind to want to help, and I had worked on the Parenting Without Sight booklet and sent in some pictures for that. The NFB put that out. And then I had signed up for the blind mentoring program that the NFB has and worked with that and done some contributions for the blind motherhood blog that Holly Bonner has. And so okay. I had advocated as best I could, but I didn't feel like it was enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then last summer, one of the people in my writing group challenged me to write another book. And I had been kind of hemming and hawing and, you know, I have so much to do and I don't know. And he said, well, what about a book of short stories? You know, that might not take you long. You write blogs and stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, maybe I could do something for advocacy, something that I've been wanting to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so that book came together. And what I would like to do is get it into the hands of interested parents, blind and sighted,
mm-hmm.
to show that blind parenting and sighted parenting really aren't all that different.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I'd also like to get it into the hands of professionals, social workers, legislators.
Yes.
We really need to get right to parent laws. They're only in 7 states.
Right.
Those are laws that say that disability is not grounds by itself with no other factors to take a child from its parents.
Right. Right.
So that's how that book came to be. And I haven't, mm-hmm. I've only had limited success so far, but it's new. It's only been out since July. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, and hopefully.
But I wanted to approach it in a humorous way, not the usual how do we change diapers and how do we.
Right.
I wanted to do something different with it.
Which is a great idea because people are going to receive that a lot better, I think, when it does start really making its way into the hands of parents and professionals. I think that's going to be unique and make your points even more effective.
Absolutely.
Right, because we've all talked about this is how we administer medicine and this mm-hmm. is how we keep track of our kids and this, you know, but this is a different approach that might make inroads.
Yeah, you answer the same questions, but in a humorous way through story instead of the matter-of-fact ways that
right.
people are accustomed to. I'm just curious, what was the process any different of... Because is this one self-published as well, I believe?
It's self-published as well, and I
was the process any different?
Doing more? No, well, it was a little quicker because I had done it before, so I knew what to expect. And but it's not even as accessible as it was before, which is disappointing because it combined the Amazon used to be fairly accessible and I could keep track of all my records and I could do everything by myself, and they have combined what was CreateSpace, which was wonderfully accessible, into now it's called KDP and it's pretty horrible. And so I wrote letters and lobbied, and so have a lot of other blind authors, and we have made some headway, but
more to be made.
It's always an uphill battle. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. So yeah, obviously I've enjoyed what I've read of this book, and I enjoyed the first book as well. And having followed you on Facebook for many years, I know you're very passionate about different causes and very strong in your beliefs and whatnot. Where can people go? And that's a good thing. That's definitely a compliment. Where
it really is.
Where can people go whether they've read the books or not, who want to learn more about, you know, Joe Pinto, the author, the person, the awesomeness that is you?
I have an author website at www.brightsideauthor.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they can see my Facebook page from there and my YouTube videos. And I have a book club.
Oh, wonderful.
Very cool.
Where you can get the prequel to The Bright Side of Darkness.
Oh, I didn't know you'd written a prequel.
Uh-huh. It's not a whole book. It's just a what would you call it? A
short story.
Teaser.
Right, but that's awesome. I'm glad that Wes asked you that and that we know that, because I'm guessing a lot of people were not aware of that. I certainly was not.
Yeah, I was not either. I will definitely be linking to that in addition to airing on Magic 109, this interview will be part of the Mixcloud and iTunes podcast, and I will put it in its entirety after it's aired on westderby.net, and I will link to, you know, to your site, as well as, again, provide links for people to go buy the books.
Absolutely.
What's next for you? You've got the two books out. You're advocating like crazy. What's next for you, do you think?
I'm considering writing another book of short stories that's more, and this is just in the seed stage. I haven't really gone too much into it. It's more, sort of family memories and recipes and, I don't know. It's just kind of in the idea stage. So I'm not sure all what it will be about, but it's memories, recipes, reflections, maybe a few poems.
Yeah. Nice. That's awesome.
And we'll see where that goes. I don't know.
Well, and it all starts in that seed stage. I mean, Bright Side of Darkness would have started there. Daddy Won't Let Mom Drive the Car would have started there, which...
Right. So we'll kind of see. Right now I'm trying to get my kid through the sixth grade, which...
Oh, that's always fun. Mine's getting through her freshman year of high school, and now we're dealing with boyfriends and all those other things that give dads coronaries.
Well, and boys are still gross, so...
Thank God. Tell her to keep that attitude for at least another 10 years.
That's funny. Joe, if you don't
mind. But it's bullies and drama and losing lunchboxes and...
Yep.
Yeah. If you don't mind me going back for a second, Joe, when you're talking about a book being still in the seed stage, it made me think of a question. A lot of people, when they're trying to write, deal with writer's block and get stuck there. So did you deal with writer's block with either of the two books, and if so, how did you overcome that? Because that's what stops a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep writing, because the second book wasn't that hard because I had already written the material, but the first one went through at least a couple of major remodels.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get through the mess of it where it looks like it's never going to amount to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to keep writing through that.
Sure.
It's like when you go to fix up a house, the house that we're in now, the house that I live in now is 100 years old, and it was built over a series of drunken weekends, I think.
That is probably the most awesome thing I've ever heard said about a house.
I think so.
And sometimes when you start a project and you kind of wish you had never begun it, because it looks like you should have just left it alone, because you make more of a mess than you ever thought you were going to make.
Right.
But once you get done, it's beautiful. So you have to get through that mess stage.
Sure.
And to do that, you just have to, you know, like we were going to paint, or we were going to fix something to do with the heat vent. And I don't even remember what we were going to do, but we took out the heat vent, and then the whole wall crumbled, and then we had to do the plaster,
and then
we had to paint around. And it was like, oh, my God, why did we even move the table?
Yeah.
Right.
Look at that heat vent. But now it's great.
Yeah.
So you have to keep plugging away through that, because eventually you'll get where you want to go.
Yeah. So the system's going to cut us off soon. Unfortunately, the conferencing software I'm using is free. But one final question that I had before we wrap up: has your daughter actually read "Daddy Won't Let Mom Drive the Car"? And what does she think of it? Since obviously a lot of these stories, you know, are about her.
Well, she's read it, and right now she just enjoys being the star of a book, but I don't think she's old enough to really have a grasp of the depth of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm hoping that when she's older, she'll read it and understand how much she means to me and how much she really has played a part in things. Because right now she just enjoys, hey, my mom wrote a book about me.
Right.
Yep. Yep. That's awesome. Well, I want to say thank you so much for your time today. I know the audience will enjoy this, and I'm looking forward to getting this out on the air. And definitely, if you write something else or ever want to come back on as a guest, we'd love to have you. Alicia, do you have anything you'd like to say?
I really appreciate this interview, Joe. I've known you on Facebook for a long time. And like Wes said, you're clearly passionate about your beliefs. And that is a good thing, because that's what makes your writing so real.
Absolutely.
That passion and that heart comes through. That's why the books are so good. I mean, yes, the technical writing is good, but it's the heart of the characters, a bright side. It's the heart and humor of, you know, daddy won't let mom drive the car. And so I definitely see those as huge strengths in your writing that come across very clearly and make the stories the awesome ones that they are.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Is there anything final you'd like to say to the Magic 109 audience or those listening on the podcast or on the website?
Stick with what your passions are.
Yeah.
And don't let anybody take those away from you.
Yes. Great advice.
Remember that.
Sure.
Great advice.
Nice podcast, but I do have one complaint. You took my name. It's not necessarily mine, but I started with a book under this title. But I'm not good name. Good podcast.
Hey Wes, just you know, wanted to say I agree with you on the whole concert etiquette thing, although seems to happen everywhere. I noticed that when I went to see Last Jedi, there was some kids or whatever like that, but in any case, I mean, if it's a family or adults like that too, whatever, as you said, they probably would just hammer. In any case, I would have loved to have been in that show. I personally like Midland and Casey myself. Little Big Town, I don't know, I'm still getting used to their sound. It's just not the same, especially like Casey. Casey, I know, is like most traditional country, and so is Midland. That On the Rocks album is quite good, but yeah, I just wanted to get my thoughts on that whole thing.
Hey Wes, this is Kelly Hill, and I've been listening to your segment on the NFB and ACB, and I'm really glad that you went and tried the other organization. I have been in ACB before, and the history there is that everything used to be the NFB, and then the ACB kind of broke away and did their own thing, and we've had these two agencies or two voices for the blind for so many years now. I think it's time to try to mend that rift and put it all behind us, and I think it's great that you're suggesting people should try both organizations and see what works for them, and everyone should indeed try stuff for themselves. So glad to hear it. Take care. Talk to you later.